Welcome to this lecture. And so in this lecture, we will make it to the Chem 4, and we will quantize test scale of field in FRW spacetime. And of course, we are taking k equals to 0 everywhere in the calculation just to simplify things. And of course, you know, this is still an approximation, because here we are treating the scalar field as test, meaning that it doesn't back react on the geometry. So you have fixed geometry, which is FRW spacetime, and you just consider a scalar field on this fixed geometry. And then you quantize these things. And of course, that omits a possibility that actually the test field back reacts on the geometry, the geometry gets changed, and in particular, some gravitational waves are produced. So we will treat that case in the next lecture. So we have seen that the action for our test scalar field, and we are taking this to be massless, is minus 1/2 square root of minus g mu nu d mu phi. And if you are using the FRW geometry with k equal to 0, then this is equal to dt d3x, and then 1/2, and then the square root of minus g is just a cube, the scale factor, and then phi dot square minus 1 over a square, not la phi square. Okay, so this is what we have. So now it is useful. So basically, this is relatively simple action, but what we eventually want to do is we want to sort of normalize or change the variables of the fields so that we be getting the standard kinetic term here. So we want to get something like 1/2 something dot square and other things. So the trick to do that is we'll do it in two steps. So first, let's use the conformal time. So you know that the conformal time, the eta, is just dt over a, so that's the first step. So we will treat rather our scalar field as a function of conformal time. And so if you do that, you find that this is d eta d3 of x, and of course you have to change it here, but also the derivatives change here. And it a little bit helps, but not entirely. So you get 1/2 a square now, and then phi prime square. This guy actually disappears here, so it's minus nabla phi square here. Okay, so this is when you change to conformal time. So now the second step is to introduce so-called Mukhanov's variable. So Mukhanov is the famous cosmologist, probably somehow associated with PI, I'm sure. And so he's basically the first person to study these cosmological perturbations. So introducing Mukhanov's variable, let's call it nu, which is simply a times phi, so this will be our nu field. So you can be famous for such a simple thing as multiplying your scalar field by a. And so if you do that, then it takes one line to arrive at a new action, which is just d eta d3x 1/2. And now we have the standard kinetic term, so nu prime square. And then you still have this minus nabla nu square. But the price to pay, of course, it's now, because you are differentiating this phi square, but now we are sort of absorbing a, which is a function of time, so we're picking up extra term here. And this extra term is a double prime over a nu square. Okay? So this is the action which we are now dealing with. So the extra term seems complicated, but we now have very nice kinetic term, the standard kinetic term for our variable nu. Okay, so that's the action. The next step was to calculate what are the equations of motion from here. And that's very simple. So you just vary with respect to nu, and you find the following equation of motion. So nu double prime minus Laplace square plus a double prime over a nu equals to zero. So that's your equation of motion coming from this action. So now you want to find solutions, expand nu in the basis of solutions, and then quantize. Okay, so want to write nu x and eta in this decomposition we have seen yesterday, so d3k, and then the linear combination of some basis solutions, uk, x and eta, and then plus ak dagger, uk star, x and eta. Okay, so this is what we want to do. You can also introduce this product which we have seen yesterday, and
I was wondering why it's not ak star, because it's still a lambda, because it's not yet.
Well, here is, you know, so these are just two independent constants in some sense. So you can put a and b in some sense, and they are independent constants, because the general solution, if you don't quantize, the general solution is just a linear combination of two solutions. So this is, you know, just a notation ak dagger, but it's not necessarily that thing. Okay, so we have that. And I just remind you that we can use the scalar product, and that it's good that you are here, because you discovered a mistake. But the mistake is actually not when I was defining the scalar product for fields, but when I was defining it for the quantum oscillator. And so the scalar product indeed here, so if I have nu 1 and nu 2, is given by I, and now there was this determinant and n mu and stuff like that, so you could write it coherently. But actually, if you're using this metric here, and basically if you're looking at this action, you see that the metric is sort of flat metric. So I have really one, you know, nu prime square minus nabla nu, so this is really flat metric. So the determinant doesn't contribute when you're writing in terms of nu. And so this scalar product is simply d3x, and then nu 1 star d eta nu 2 minus nu d eta nu 1 star nu 2. So this is the scalar product I introduced yesterday, and I said, well, okay, and that was the question, why there is I? And the answer is, of course, there should be I here, but equally well, there should be I when you are defining for the quantum oscillator. So when I was just saying, so basically, this guy here would be the correct scalar product for the quantum oscillator. So I actually omitted I, and it wouldn't work. So all the solutions which I've been writing down actually are not, if the I is not there, FF is not equal to 1, but it's equal to minus I or something like that. So yeah, so we better define for quantum oscillator with I as well. Okay, so that's the scalar product. And so what you require is that your basic solution, that the basis of your solution, the UK, is actually normalized with respect to the scalar product. So you require things like UK prime, but now this is this in respect to the distributions, if you want, so it's delta 3 k minus k prime, and then similarly for uk star, that would be just minus that, and then the orthogonal, so if you have uk and uk star, then it's zero. Okay. So now we have these normalized bases of the solutions, which we are expanding our solution for nu. And now we can use the symmetries of the problem. And if you look at your action, you see that really the metric or the problem is independent with respect to the coordinates x. So coordinates x is actually a killing vector here, because we have this k equal to 0 case. And so in that case, you can just write down uk in terms of x coordinates, it's just a standard Fourier transform. So uk x eta is equal to 1 over 2 pi 3 halves. But this is not true with respect to coordinate, with respect to the conformal time, because the conformal time actually enters non-trivially your problem. Okay, so this will be given by some function fk of eta, and then the standard Fourier transform with respect to x coordinate. So you can take this by symmetry of the problem. So I cannot write I eta t, I eta omega, because that's not a killing vector, but the other ones are. Okay, so this is the solution you can write down. And then you just take this solution, so it must be a solution of the equation of motion, so you just plug it into your equation of motion, and you get some other equation. Okay, of course that equation, because I know everything here, will be an equation for this fk. Okay, and so if you do it, so plug to equation of motion, and so what you get is a famous equation, and again the same guy, so Mukhanov's equation, Mukhanov's equation, and that reads fk double prime plus k square minus a double prime over a fk equals to 0. Okay, so far it's very easy. So now if you look at it, really fk is a function of eta. So what you are getting here is, so we reduced our problem of studying the scalar field in FRW spacetime to a problem of basically finding this fk, which is function of eta only. And if you look at this equation, so a, of course, depends on eta, so you just reduce your problem to time-dependent harmonic oscillator. Okay, so if I call this omega squared of eta, then I just reduce exactly to the equation I had before. So we have, in some sense, infinite number of time-dependent harmonic oscillators. One for each k. If you want. Okay? So now the consistency of the two scalar products. Actually, if you use this scalar product for the field, then you find that your functions fk are precisely normalized with respect to the previous scalar product, if I include that I in it. And so they satisfy fk equals to 1, and fk star is minus 1, as we had using the previously defined scalar product for function for quantum mechanics. Okay, and so on. So very good. So really, you reduced your problem to studying time-independent harmonic oscillator. So now you want to quantize these things. And that's done very simply. Yes?
So can we also deduce these relations from the scalar product of the basis vectors uk prime?
Yeah, so what you're requiring is that these modes, uk, satisfy this scalar product. So this is new, if you want. And this is the old one. And this is the new one. So you just use this thing here, that this must be true. And then you plug in whatever you see here, and then you get that actually this function here satisfies these properties in terms of the old scalar product. So that's how it goes. Yeah. Okay, so now you want to quantize that. Of course, you just promote AKs to operators, and you impose the commutation relations. So now for that, you need to find what is the momentum conjugate to your scalar field variable. But similar to what we have seen for harmonic oscillator, where it was just q dot, it is just nu prime. So pi is just nu prime, is the canonical momentum. And you just impose the equal time commutation relations, so nu eta x pi eta x prime, the commutation. And again, so this is a field, so it's normalized with respect to the Dirac distributions. So here's I and delta 3 x minus x prime. Okay. And similarly, you can write this in terms of the creation and annihilation operators. And so you are getting that AK Dagger is just delta 3 K minus K prime. AK prime Dagger is delta 3 K minus K prime. Okay, piece of cake. Then you introduce the vacuum, as you are used to. So you just define the vacuum to be a state which is annihilated by all AK, or all K. And that's your vacuum state. And then you can define the particle states where you just create on your vacuum, I don't know, that many particle states. Okay, so we quantize the scalar field. So now let's get something out of it. And so what you are getting out of that, or what is the interesting quantity, is really the size of fluctuations in vacuum. And that's called power spectrum. Okay, so now you can define a power spectrum. And people are interested in the power spectrum in the k-space. They define phi k and phi k prime. Okay, so I return back to the original variable. Okay, so let me just write it here. So now if you write, so we are using here the variable nu, but the variable nu is just related to phi by this rescaling by a. Okay, so if you just write in terms of the old, phi, just getting this 1 over a in front of everything, b3k, and then you have, there's this 2 pi, the 3 halves, then ak, fk eta, e, kx, and then the other term. Okay, so this is the original variable phi. And so now you want to do is you want to calculate what is the size of the fluctuations of this phi. What is the two-point correlation function in the k-space of this thing here? Okay, so what it is just, with respect to x coordinates, here's just the standard Fourier transformation. So we just write it as a standard Fourier transformation using that property here. So it's just d3x, d3x prime, and then e to I kx, e to I k prime x prime. And then the correlation function in the x space but of course what we expect is that because the space is homogeneous everywhere, anisotropic in some sense. So this two-point correlation function must only depend on the distance between x and x prime. It cannot depend on anything else. So this must be some function of x minus x prime, in fact, like that, but it doesn't matter. So using the translation invariance, you can actually assume that this thing is true. And then you can convince yourself that you can actually do the integrals if this is just function of x minus x prime. You can do these integrals over x and x prime. And what you should find by translation invariance, you should get a result which, okay, so there are some p factors, which is this 2 pi cube, and then you should get something like delta 3 k plus k prime if you do these integrals. So this is, and then something which depends only on k. Okay, so by translation invariance, the result of performing this integral must be of this form. And this quantity here, which is non-trivial dependence on k, is called the power spectrum. Okay, by definition, it's called the power spectrum. Okay, so this, if you want, this is a definition of the what you mean by power spectrum. Okay. On the other hand, you can actually calculate what it is because we know everything here. Okay, so we know what these guys are, and so you can just plug them in and calculate really what the result is. So this is, in fact, in some sense, your expectation and the definition of the power spectrum. And then now we can actually calculate it. So if you actually calculate it, so we have phi is proportional to 1 over a, but you have two phis there. So the result must be 1 over a squared. And then the horrible thing, so you have d3x, d3x prime, but each phi x actually has an integral over k as well. So we'll have d3l, d3l prime, and then there are some factors, 2 pi cube. And then you have to plug in all these things. But because you are calculating the expectation value, so this is sandwiched by the vacuum. And so the only thing which is actually non-trivial is that if you have on the right-hand side a creation operator acting on vacuum, and on the left-hand side an annihilation operator, because otherwise you would just get zero. Okay? So then this is given by AL bigger out of four terms which we have there, and then FL prime star e to I L x and e to minus I L prime x prime, and then we still have whatever was here e to I k x and then e to I k prime x prime. Okay, so now I'm saying this is the only term which contributes out of the four terms you have. Yes?
Should one of the AL or a dagger have a prime?
Yes, thank you. Thanks. Any other mistakes? Okay, so now actually this is what it is, of course, is the only thing which is acting on by this expectation value and just gives you one. So this guy disappears, and then you have FL square in some sense, but you have many integrals, and all these integrals give you sort of like delta functions, and they kill the other integrals and so on. So in the end, the result is actually very, very simple. If you do all these integrations, what you find that this is equal to 1 over a squared, and then surprise 2 pi cube delta k plus k prime, and then f k squared. Do it yourself if you don't believe me, but it's just integrating exponentials, and they give you all delta functions in some sense. Okay, very good. So this is what the actual calculation gives you. Okay. So now you can compare with your definition of the power spectrum, and you see that the power spectrum B is simply given B star of K is simply given by 1 over A square FK square, which is again an analog of what we have seen in the harmonic oscillator, if you want. Okay, so to find the power spectrum, how big the fluctuations of the field are, all you need to do is actually find this FK square. But of course, FK is a solution of your Mukhanov's equation. Okay, so what you need to do is just to solve Mukhanov's equation. But to solve that equation, you need to also provide the initial conditions. So this is given by the solution of Mukhanov's equation provided some initial condition. So now there is a particularly nice choice of initial conditions. And so if you look at your equation here, there's this omega square, which depends on our conformal time. And of course, this will be time independent if A double prime over A actually goes to zero at some point. So what you really impose is that one choice of the initial conditions is that you say A double prime over A goes to zero at early times. Okay, so if this is true, then my omega of eta actually goes to k, which is a constant. So again, you can think about this as when we had the harmonic oscillator, and so we were choosing these in and out states. So we were saying, well, in the infinite past, omega was equal to a constant omega in. And then something happened, some interaction happened, and then in the future, it's again given by a constant omega out. So basically what I am saying here is I'm choosing such an initial condition so that I can call fk, the solution here, something like f in. Okay? Because in the early times, actually an omega of eta was a constant. Okay, so that's, okay, very good. So if this is true, then at these early times, you have that fk of eta, and you can solve that equation. So now a double prime over a goes to zero, and it's just a solution as you know it. So it's 1 over 2k e to minus I k eta. And so this is basically your requirement, and it's analog of f in, if you want, f in quantum mechanics. So that's one particular interesting, nice choice of initial conditions, which you are assuming, you know, before the inflation started or at the beginning of inflation. Okay, and then you can. So this is now your mode. This is your basis which you use to expand your solutions. And of course, that basis defines a concrete vacuum. And so this concrete vacuum, the famous vacuum, is called Bunch-Davis vacuum. So then, you know, using this basis, using this fk, now I can really specify what these modes are, and then it defines the vacuum. Of course, this concretely defined by ak, and then this vacuum here is called Bunch-Davis vacuum. Okay, so usually people, when they discuss inflation, they just assume that you know, the inflation started at Bunch Davis vacuum, but modes look simply, you know, this way, and all it does is it requires that A double prime over A goes to zero at very early times. Of course, this may be subject to a discussion whether this is the only possibility, and then there are, you know, papers written what would happen if actually you change this vacuum to some other vacuum. So there are papers discussing, you know, what if I change my initial conditions? But most often, actually, people take these initial conditions for the inflation. Okay, and so of course, what we are, let me just draw this picture again, what we are trying to do, remind you. So we have the inflation era here. So this is eta. Let's say we start somewhere, well, we start here, this inflation. And then you would have the era of reheating. Okay, and so the assumption is that here, before the inflation started, we start with Bunch Davis vacuum. Which means F is proportional to E to minus K eta. Okay, and then we do the quantization of the field here, and then and you can calculate the power spectrum at every time eta here. But in fact, what you are really interested in is how the power spectrum, how the fluctuations looked like when the inflation, you know, stopped, when it ended. So you are interested in the PK basically here. So PK here, which is, and of course this happens when the mode leaves the horizon. So here, mode leaves the horizon. I remind you that this happens when K is something like HA, right? So and then the mode is frozen here. So here you have like fluctuations, right? And then the mode is frozen here. And then it reemerges again when the reheating stops. So now you have the radiation here. And this is my P of K, and then mode reemerges if you want. And the oscillations are transferred to our standard mode particles. Okay, so that's the picture which we have in mind. So really, what we will be after is that we will try to calculate this power spectrum K at the time when inflation ended. Okay? So that's the aim here. Does it make sense? Maybe. Okay. So now, unfortunately, well, you can play with these things, but you can get pretty good information by solving this Mukarov's equation in the prototype of inflation that is in De Sitter expansion. Okay, so now concretely, let's consider De Sitter expansion and see what we can learn about the power spectrum in the De Sitter expansion. So now you model your inflation by simply a cosmological constant, if you want, which is large and positive. So now, if you have De Sitter space, I'll just write this again, although I wrote it many times. So the scale factor exponentially increases. So it goes like A e to ht, where h is a constant. Okay, so then we need to know what the conformal time is. And it's just integral minus infinity to some time dt over at. Okay, so that's how the conformal time is defined. And if you just plug in what A is, that it's exponential e to ht, then it just gives you minus 1 over h and e to minus ht. And if you plug it back in terms of A, then this is just given minus 1 over ha. Okay? So I remind you that if you have the, you know, the accelerating universe, this eta, the confirmed factor, runs from minus infinity to zero. So that's something we have seen in the second lecture. So eta runs from minus infinity to zero.
So there was no beginning.
So the beginning of the universe is at eta equals to minus infinity. Is a, you know, big bang or whatever, or, you know, when we, so that's precisely then the place, the Bunch-Davis vacuum. Okay. And we will be interested at the end, what happens at the end of inflation, which corresponds to eta equal to zero, which is like the end or of inflation. Yeah.
So the scale factor is like the matter content dependent, right?
Of course.
We are,
yeah.
We are just putting.
So here, what I'm just saying is that the matter is just a cosmological constant.
And what about phi?
What about phi? I'm just saying. So you can. Yeah. So of course, a cosmological constant, you can model it by saying, well, the scale field actually has constant value, in some sense. So yeah. So what I was trying here is I was modeling the inflation by a scalar field, but now I'm saying, okay, it gives me some equation, so let's just see how this equation behaves in a simplified case. And the simplified case is, you say, well, the scalar field is very, very special, it actually corresponds to just a cosmological constant. So if you want, you know, the value of the scalar field is frozen, and yeah, completely frozen. It's not rolling at all. So usually the inflation of the field is rolling a little bit. But here, I'm not ruling anything, I'm just having h equal to constant. Okay, and you can do it with scalar field. Okay, so now this is what happens in this case. So now you can write down what your Mukhanov's equation is very concretely. And so Mukhanov's equation is just given over there, fk double prime plus k square minus a double prime over a fk equals to zero. Okay, so now you know what a is, it's just the exponential, you know what a double prime is, and so if you write it explicitly, it's just fk double prime plus k square minus 2 over eta square fk. So this is how your Mukhanov's equation looks concretely now for this expansion. Okay, so this is my omega square. And so now you can explicitly check actually that if this was true, then the Bunch-Davis vacuum indeed happened here. Because now you can go to the early times, which means you are going to eta goes to minus infinity. When you are going, this eta going to minus infinity, this then disappears. And omega actually goes to k. So this goes to k squared at early times. So you could say that the De Sitter inflation would actually indeed have a Bunch-Davis vacuum at early times. Okay? Very good. So that means that really we can impose that condition which we have there. So again, at early times, we can have fk eta given by this fn here. Yes?
When we did that on the left-hand side, we said that k was 0. So is that
we said that k is 0, where did we say it?
Like at the top, as in like k in the metric is 0.
Oh, that's big K. It's capital K.
Yes.
That's the curvature of DFRW spacetime.
So then when we have the DS expansion, is that still valid?
Well, we've seen in your tutorial that you can have the sitter. It's all possible case, right?
Okay.
It depends how you slice your the sitter, and then you can have different slices of the sitter space, but yeah, you can have still 8.0. Yeah. And that's a very good question, because now you can connect with your tutorial. Thank you for that. Okay, so we have the initial condition that fk is just 1 over square root of tk to minus kx, k eta, as eta goes to minus infinity. Okay, and so now you solve this equation, you can solve this equation exactly. So this is your equation, this is equal to 0, and this is your initial condition, and that has a unique solution. So solution is just f of k is 1 over 2k e to minus I k eta, and then 1 minus I over k eta. And that's the exact solution which Mathematica gives you if you say, I want to solve this equation, provided that initial condition. So this is your solution. So very good. So now we found the solution of the Mukarov's equation in this case, in the simplified case. And so you can calculate the power spectrum at the end of inflation. Okay. So the power spectrum pk is just fk square over a square. Okay, and so this a square gives you something. It gives you us eta square. And then if you take complex conjugate to this and multiply these two, because that disappears, and it gives you 1 over 2k, and then 1 plus 1 over k square eta square. So this is exact, and for any eta, but in the end you are interested in eta goes to 0, which is the end of inflation. And so this goes as eta goes to 0. Well, surprisingly, it actually has a well-defined limit. And it goes like 8 squared over 2k cubed. Okay, so now people who know CFT should be very, very happy, because they should immediately recognize scale invariant spectrum. Okay, so anyway, so this is the result, how the power spectrum looks at the end of inflation, and it behaves like 1 over k cubed. So this is a famous scale invariant spectrum. Which, you know, what are the fluctuations, what they look like at the end of inflation if the inflation was just a sitter expansion. Okay? So now you may be asking why 1 over k cubed is actually scale invariant. And I'll give you the reason and some very trivial calculation, but you probably know much more face the fancy way to show that it is the right thing. But anyway, so why is this really a scale invariant? And so you know that if I have phi of x, so then you scale that, so scaling transformation, what you are doing is that you just scale x to lambda x, okay? So you get phi lambda times x.
Why doesn't the field also scale?
Oh, it will. Yeah, it will. Okay, so scaling just the coordinates, this is what you are doing. But now, of course, you write x, well, lambda infinitesimally as 1 plus epsilon. And if you do that, you just see that this is, you know, x plus epsilon times x. So now you Taylor expand, and then you find what delta phi is. Okay? And so this actually implies that delta phi is, well, I'll have epsilon x, but I have, so I have d phi over dx, but I have to multiply by epsilon and x. So it's not a surprise that this is what it is. It's d phi over dx. This is how your field changes. You won't understand the transformation. So now you may consider a two-point function, phi x and phi 0. And if you have scale invariant theory, then the two-point function shouldn't scale. Okay? So two-point function is invariant. Underscaling transformation so that means that if I really do this scaling thing, so if I do this change x times d over dx on my two-point function, then I must get 0. So you have 0 equals to x times d over dx of your two-point function. And I'll just take it at phi of x and phi of 0. OK, just for simplicity, you could have x and x prime, but it doesn't matter. Yes?
So please, we to get a delta phi, we Taylor expanded about x.
Yeah.
So you're not getting why there's no epsilon attached to the.
Oh, there should be epsilon. Yeah. So I'm just taking, so epsilon basically tells you, you know, how much I'm moving there. So I'm just taking basically the generator, or I'm not taking the parameter epsilon. Yeah. And basically, epsilon is there. Yeah. Okay. So this must be equal to 0. So let's write what it is. So 0 must be equal to, and now you write it explicitly, d over dx. And then you go to the Fourier space for these phis. So you have d3k. 2 pi power 3, d3k prime, 2 pi to power 3, and then e minus a kx, and then the other x is equal to 0, so I don't have the other exponential, but I have the phi k and phi k prime. Okay. So this is just going to the Fourier space. But this guy here is just precisely what I defined to be a power spectrum. Okay, so by definition, phi k and phi k prime is just given here. So it's 2 pi to 3. So this is 2 pi of 3 delta k plus k prime, the plus, broad plus, and then power spectrum of k. Okay, so this is what it is. So now, of course, the only x-dependent thing, so you're differentiating with respect to x, but the only x-dependent part is this exponential here. So if you do the derivative with respect to x, it just brings down k. So what effectively you have under the integral is x dot k. So now there's a clever way how to rewrite this. And you can easily check that in the end it's just x times k. So this is equal to now d3k 2 pi 3. By the way, you can of course get rid of the integral over k prime because it's just still by that delta function there. Okay, so now this is 2 pi 3. Okay, let me write this one more step. So let's write it here. Well, this is equal to x e over dx, ek x, and then pk. So that's just doing the one of the integrals. But now I want to actually put this inside the integral. And you can do it by the following trick, d3k 2 pi 3. And then I'll write this thing here, d over dk of e minus kx times k and times dk. Okay, so now if you look at this, I change the derivative with respect to x to a derivative with respect to k. But in the end, what it does is you're still getting x times k. Okay, so this is definitely true. That's the trick. But anyway, so now once you have that, you can integrate by parts. You can actually, you know, pull this this derivative onto this guy and that guy, and assuming that the bounded terms actually do not contribute. Okay, so now integrate by parts. Very good. So now, if I act with d over dk on k, so you are basically doing a divergence of a vector. And the divergence of a vector gives you the dimension of the space. So it gives you 3. Okay? And then the other term will be just the derivative of pk. Okay? So it's no surprise that this is equal to integral d3k 2 pi power 3. And then I have e kx. And then if I act with derivative on k, I just get 3. And if I act on this thing, I'll just put it there. So it's plus k times d over dk on p of k. Everybody happy? Yeah, so just playing, you know, with the integral. Okay. So just integration by parts, throwing away the boundary term, and maybe moving the derivative on this guy, which gives you that, and moving the derivative on that guy, which gives you that.
I just was wondering, trying to see, but I think it works. Like the boundary terms that it will actually die b goes like 1 over k cubed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So now this whole thing has to be equal to 0, is what you are saying here. So this guy actually has to be equal to 0, otherwise it doesn't work. So you are getting equation for pk, and you can easily check that 3 plus k times d over dk on pk, then actually pk has to be proportional to 1 over k cubed. Just try, or you can see it, that this is the only solution. So really, if you require scale invariance, then the power spectrum has to go like 1 over k cubed. And this is precisely what you are getting out of the Sitter inflation.
What's the power spectrum on Minkowski?
On Minkowski? That's a good question. I don't know. Is it?
Do we see it if we just set h equals 0? Because then it would be just 0.
Yeah. Okay, your homework. I need to tell you the result. You asked for it. Okay, so we have scale invariant spectrum. Well, that's why I call this guy scale invariant. So this would be all very nice if the inflation was just the Sitter expansion. We would be finding that really the spectrum is scale invariant. However, the universe is not so simple as that. And so you are getting something which is almost scale invariant, but not entirely. And the question is why it's not exactly scale invariant, or you know what's happening. And you'll see that really, if you have these inflation parameters, epsilon and eta, which have to be small so that the inflation works, then actually this will precisely predict that the spectrum is not scale invariant exactly, but there is some small change of scale invariant.
It's 1 or 2 K, the power spectrum.
Okay, very good. So you did your homework very quickly. That's great. So, in general, people talk about a quantity which is called spectral index. It's called an S. And historically, for scale modes, actually, it's defined as 1 plus k d over dk of logarithm k cube. P of k. Okay, so if you have scale invariant spectrum, then pk goes like 1 over k cube. This guy doesn't contribute, so it's just 0. So ns equals to 1. Okay, so ns equals to 1 is the scale invariant spectrum. And terminology, ns is smaller than 1. People say this is red tilted. And if it's bigger than 1, then it's blue tilted. Okay. One more terminology. So this is the definition of the spectral index, and then one terminology is, you know, when it's blue tilted, when it's red tilted. Second terminology is whether this ns is actually really a constant or if it's something strange. So if it's constant, okay, so with ns, so provided ns equals to a constant, then this guy is a constant. You can find what the corresponding pk looks like. You just have a differential equation. This is some constant, and you can solve that differential equation easily. So then pk just behaves as k to minus 3 plus ns minus 1. It's the solution of that differential equation if ns equals to 1. Okay. If it's not a constant, okay, so one more thing. So this is a constant spectral index, and the pk must look like that. And in principle, this is just, you know, pk is proportional to something. But if I know how pk look like at one instant of time for some k, then I can write the full pk. So then pk actually is written as, you know, some amplitude which tells me how big the fluctuations are, you know, or how big pk looks like, and then you can write it at k over k0 and then minus 3 plus ns minus 1. What is this? Okay, so here this A0 is the amplitude of fluctuations, amplitude at k equal to k0. So this is certainly true. So now I told you, okay, so that's one possibility. So ns equals to constant, and this is true, and that is true. Okay, so then in some sense, you just can describe your primordial power spectrum by two parameters. You describe it by this parameter ns, and you describe it by this amplitude a0. So we have two parameters describing spectrum in primordial power spectrum. And these are how big they were, a0, and then whether And it's red tilted or blue tilted or whatever. So now I told you at some point that you can fit the whole universe by 6 parameters. So these are two of them. So one of them really is the size of primordial fluctuations, and the second one is how they differ from the scale invariant spectrum. Okay. Of course, more complicated possibility is that NS is not equal to constant. NS is not equal to constant. And then you would, the terminology is you call that a running spectral index. So if you go to a cosmology talk and people talk about that something runs, they usually talk about spectral index. So that means just that NS wouldn't be a constant. Okay. So now we're almost done. So now I just tell you what are the experimental data here. So the experimental data, so again, you look at CMB, you look at, you know, the Planck results. So Planck data, and they suggest that actually NS is constant, and it's given by NS is 0.96 plus minus 0.01. Okay, so actually it seems that we don't have precisely scale invariant spectrum, but the spectrum is actually a red-tilted spectrum. Okay. And so as we shall see in the following lecture, is that this is something which is precisely basically predicted by the theory of inflation. Okay, so this is one of the reasons people believe in inflation. Questions? Okay, let's start in 15 minutes. Why somehow so that I still have 10 minutes and was so relaxed? But shit, now it's not that case. Let's go for a tea or coffee or something.